This is The Huddle.
It's awful!
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Let's go eat!
The Huddle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bunkus, and Stacey Ross. We are getting you ready for Week 2's matchup between the Seattle Seahawks. They're on the road taking on the San Francisco 49ers, who are looking for their first win. Here to help us break down this preview, it is Ray Roberts, part of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. We're going in the trenches. Ray, how's it going?
This is going good. How are you guys doing?
We're well. Obviously, really excited following this win. There's still so many questions about this team, but what a way to start the season here, Ray.
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, I took my a few times out of the press box and just went into the stadium just so I could hear and feel the noise, and it was just unbelievable. Like, it was just really hard to even stand in the lower bowl and talk to the person right next to you. So it was super exciting to be able to feel that. And then for the team to come out and play the way they did, you know, if you want to call it bend but don't break or gutty or gritty or whatever you want to call it, the object of the game is to get the win, and they got the win.
Big Ray, we spoke to Phil Haynes, and I'm going to go out and say that he is a Big Ray kind of guy, man. What did you see from him this weekend or this Monday against the Broncos?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that there's not maybe a little bit of physicality is a drop off between him and Damian Lewis, but he always shows himself well. He did have like the one holding call that brought a run back, but he looks like the dude that I think they thought they drafted a few years ago, and he had to overcome some injuries. But I've always thought of him as like a DJ Fluker type player, but with a little bit more athleticism. And so he's starting to show that with the more reps he gets, and they feel very comfortable having him in there. And so I thought it was great that I didn't have to take my attention off the tackles to try to check him out as much, because they were doing such a good job in pass protection, and they were creating lanes for Penny to run the ball.
How about the two young fellas, Ray, your tackles? How do you think they performed?
Yeah, you know, I thought they did pretty good, you know, for their first game. And the places where they didn't show as well, I think, are all coachable, correctable things. It wasn't a matter of their ability. So, for instance, Charles Cross, I think, was kind of a little bit wary of speed. And so he was in his pass protection, was trying to get back so fast that he ended up being head up with the defender. And when you're head up, with the defender, you give him inside leverage, or he can have outside leverage. So I always tell guys, if you're even, they're leaving. So they're either going to go inside or they're going to get you around the corner. So I just think he just needs to trust that he can play a little bit behind on that inside shoulder, and then be able to run the guy around the corner. And so then in the running game, I just think that Charles just needs to get his pass down a little lower and then a little bit more violent with his hands. And then Big Abe just kept building on his resume, man. I think the first running play of the game, he had a pancake, you know. And so a lot of people were saying that, you know, he was doing his stuff against backups in the preseason, but it doesn't seem like the starters are going to be any more safe from getting flat back than anyone else. And then I thought he did a pretty good job in pass protection. So I still think that those two dudes are going to be around for a long time. The things that they need that they struggle with, if you want to call it that, in the game, are all things that can be corrected literally in like 2 days of practice.
Now, this might be an overreaction. It might just be an easy narrative to have. But there were a couple folks, whether it was broadcasters for the game or critics watching the game, who said, ironically, considering the issues predating Russell Wilson being traded from Seattle, this could end up being the best offensive line Seattle's had in several years. Do you see that potential? Potential being keyword. It's, you know, heading into Week 2.
You know, absolutely. I mean, you know, just from their top seven guys, you know, the starters, including you know, that's what Damian Lewis started, and then including Phil Haynes and then Jake Curran. To me, that's the best seven that they've had in a long time. And I'm telling you, the reason that is that way, and I've said this before, is they went out and got dudes that have PhDs in what they do. They didn't go find a defensive lineman that they were trying to make a guard. They didn't find a center that they were trying to make the tackle. They didn't find a tackle that they were trying to make center and all this stuff. They went out and found tackles that have played tackle for a long time, and so you know all the little nuances and all the little things you have to learn to be able to play offensive tackle effectively in the league. And then they have guards that have played guards their entire life, and they have a center who might be a little bit undersized, but he's been a center, and he's been in this system, and he's a great communicator. So I think they have a chance to really – I think by the third quarter of the season, you may be looking at one of the better, you know, offensive lines in the league, you know, whether they're top 10 or 12 or 13, but they will not be at the bottom the way some of the people had them starting the season. And I think that was just based on them starting two rookie tackles. But I really like what they have up there. I like the pocket they were creating for Geno to throw from. I like some of the lanes that I thought they got a little bit, the running game got a little bit too horizontal at times. I think it's better when they're getting downhill like they were at the last five games of the season. But I think that this offensive line is going to do really well as the season goes on.
Yeah, dumbass Pro Football Focus had him ranked 32nd, Bump and Ray.
And yeah.
32nd. You said, yeah, they have rated low. Pro Football Focus put him at number 32.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus needs a punch in the throat. That's what they
do. Yes, they do.
That's such an O-line response, too.
Punch in the throat. That's what they do. Ray, how does the play calling build off of what we saw last week? We saw some RPOs. We saw the tight ends get involved. We saw the run game get going, the boot. Is there something that you need to see that says, all right, well, that was week one. Here are the wrinkles that we see off of that.
Yeah, well, you know, the cool thing about this offense is there's always run plays off the pass action, and there's always pass plays off the run action. So I think they were doing a good job setting some of that up. Like, I even like the way they ran a counter one time, like a true counter where they pulled the left guard and left tackle. Unfortunately, the Broncos had a dude coming off unblocked off the end that wasn't accounted for. But then they came back and ran a RPO off of that when they threw a quick slant to a DK across the middle. So, like, stuff like that is what makes this offense unique when the first two or three steps of a play, you can't tell if it's the run or it's the pass. And so I think they did a really good job of setting that up. I'd like to see is for them to get that kind of split zone where they're in the quarterback's on the center. The running back is going to get the ball, and his aiming point is the gap between the right guard and the right tackle. But you're really kind of coming downhill, so you can slide backside and end up hitting the gap between the center and the left guard, or the left guard and the left tackle. And so that's where Rashard Penny made all his hay in the last five games. So I like that more downhill attacking approach versus getting too horizontal. So I think if they can add some of that, a little bit more into that. And then they also threw some of the fly motion in at one time, but like you would have loved this. They had the fly motion, they had the counter, and then they threw the ball off of all of that. So if you're a linebacker and you're trying to read all of that, did he just hand the ball to the Eskridge or did now is the running back following the pulling, you know, lineman? Oh shoot, he's throwing the ball behind me. That kind of stuff is I hope, you know, last year they started the season doing that kind of stuff. Then all of a sudden it disappeared. Hope it doesn't disappear this week.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm very, very eager to see those running backs out there, too. He is Ray Roberts. You can hear him every single Thursday on The Huddle with us, but also on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. Ray, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I just had one question, though. Like, in the huddle, I'm the left tackle. Bump is the receiver. Dave is the linebacker,
right,
which is weird in an offensive huddle, but we'll take him. And he can put him at fullback or something. What are you, Stacey? Are you the quarterback? Like, what are you in the huddle?
Absolutely. I'm the quarterback here. I'm the coach. Let's be real. I'm the coach here. I need, like, the get back guy. I'm, like, yelling into my headset.
Okay. Right. I just wanted to make sure, you know, we had the whole crew. That's all.
That's exactly right. A good question. Thanks, Ray. Talk to you next week.
You guys have a good one.
All right. The voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel, joins us next. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2
on Seattle Sports Station.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and Stacey Ross. Joined now by the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel. Raves, how's it going?
Stacey, it's going great. How about you guys?
We're fantastic. Now, I do want to look ahead to week 2, right? That is what we're doing today on The Huddle. But first, Rabel, a fantastic game Monday. What might have been the moment that stands out to you most looking back at it?
Oh, wow. There were a number of them. I thought early in the game that Geno kind of set the tone with his
ability to kind of duck under a defender, scramble out of trouble, step forward in the pocket, and then find Diss wide open to give you the lead. Automatically now, you're making Denver play from a position of catching up, which they never did. And so I thought that was as good a play as there was, perhaps, offensively, although I'm sure one will come to me when we hang up the phone. But do we still say hang up the phone, by the way?
Since
nobody has a phone that you hang up anymore. Okay. And then, you know, defensively, a couple of sacks getting to Russ. And, you know, there's a good reason why Uchenna got Uchenna Nwosu got the defensive player of the week, because he just made a lot of great plays as well. So there were a lot of great things to talk about after that game.
Yeah, Rabes, what do you think about Geno's performance? Like, I just was blown away. I thought, and I don't want to jump the gun on it or anything, but I just don't think we've seen that from him. He looked like, especially the play where, you know, he throws to Will Disley, but and then it continued. It wasn't like that was just luck. The throw to Colby Parkinson was probably the best. I mean, I don't know. I just don't think that we've ever seen anything like that. I was really surprised. You know, that sounds kind of like I'm being negative about Geno, that I'd never seen this from him before. But really, I mean, he just looked like he was entirely in control the entire game.
Right. Well, think about it. I mean, we didn't see that kind of consistency when he was a young player back with the Jets. He also didn't have a very good team around him, so he struggled and eventually lost his job there. And then he's been a backup for all these years, a staff that I wish I could have gotten in, and it was talked about a lot during the week, but I wish we could have gotten it in on Monday night, and that was, you know, he is it was 8 years from his last official starting, you know, start the opening season. And that hasn't happened since Zeke Bredkowski did it for the Packers back in the early 60s. I mean, that's how far you have to go back to find a quarterback who has had that kind of, you know, layoff, if you will, from starting as the official starter of the team. And he stepped up and he played like the starter. He ran that offense, you know, at one point, 13 for 13 at one point. That's exactly the way you want to run that offense. And a couple of them, you know, were great touchdown passes. It wasn't just dink and dunk. So I agree. I think he even said it. He said, I'm a better player now. I'm a more mature player. I see things better. I understand better. All the things that you need from a quarterback, and you want him to do those kinds of things on Sunday or Monday night, he did.
Rabel, going into last week's game, we expected Russell to let the ball go, throw it a bunch of times, throw it 42 times, and then we assume that the Hawks will be more cautious when it comes to Geno throwing the football. I look at the 49ers and the Seahawks, and I say, yes, you got a veteran on one side, second-year guy on the other side, but the approaches to this game might be similar, right? Lean on the run, take your chances when it comes to the pass game. What type of game are you expecting from both offenses this week?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm expecting. Now watch, they'll prove us wrong,
right?
And the 49ers will come out and try to light it up. You know, let's start with the 49ers. You've got a couple of pretty good receivers. I mean, they're not the typical kind of speedy, although they've got speed. Ray McCloud's got some speed. But Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk are both kind of bigger body guys who are run after the catch kind of guys. And then you got a fullback who does the same thing. Kyle Juszczyk is maybe the best fullback in the game, throwing no aspersions Nick Ballore's way. But Trey Lance, he definitely can throw the ball downfield. He's just not quite as accurate as maybe you'd like him to be, and he's a young guy. So with that all in mind, I expect to see Jeff Wilson Jr. get more than his share of carries for the 49ers. Defensively, when you look at him, it sort of begs the question, if you can't run, you better be able to throw the control pass. And these guys have a terrific front four. They've got excellent linebackers. Fred Warner is maybe as good a linebacker in the middle as there is in football. And the secondary is good. I wouldn't say great, but I'd say good in the secondary. So, you know, you're going to have to pick your spots and up, you know, as my old offensive coordinator, Jerry Rome, used to say to Jim Zorn back in the day, believe what you see. If you are Geno Smith, believe what this defense is giving you. And if that means underneath routes, throw it. If that means a back out of the backfield wheeling down the sidelines, throw it. If that means a crossing route with a single high safety, throw it. But believe what you see.
Wasn't there a story about Jerry Rome's toupee coming off and it was caught on film in practice?
It actually didn't come off. It came about halfway down his ear before he realized it was on its way to the ground. He got run into by the play, kind of backed up into his lap, and he was looking at the play sheet to see what the next call was. And it kind of started to slide down his head, and so he grabbed it quickly and pushed it all in one movement. I mean, it was as smooth a move as I have ever seen. And then to give Jerry – and it was a terrible toot, by the way. And to give Jerry credit, when after Jack was fired in 82, and at the end of the 82 season, they let the whole staff go, and Chuck came in and brought all his own guys in. Jerry – and I wasn't in there, but the story was – that he took his toupee off and he laid it down on the trainer's table as he walked out of the building for the last time. and he never wore one after that. But boy, was he a good coach, smart. And you know, he had his hands full. He was the offensive coordinator, the quarterback's coach, and the receiver's coach.
Man.
We didn't have all those other guys. We had just one coach for all that stuff. So he was really good. And he gave us a system that worked really well for us.
Yeah, you know, during your day, it went from like 8 coaches. I think when I was playing, it was 9, 10. Now there's like 26,
mm-hmm.
I think.
So, yeah, exactly. Half the team. I mean, literally, you've got half as many coaches as you have team members, just about. Yeah, my first year, we didn't have a special teams coach. Rusty Tillman came in like the fourth year as a special teams coach. But before that, the running backs coach handled special teams. So, you know, it's just a different time. And of course, you got a lot more money as an organization to pay for that, too.
Yeah. By the way, our buddy Adam Ray, who is the comedian, actor, all that, he comes on our show all the time. He told me to tell you that he's going as Steve Rabel for Halloween.
Silence.
Sorry, I missed that last part. He's going where?
He's going as you for Halloween.
Oh, my God. Well, that's lovely. I'm trying to think if I have like I know I have some old newscaster ties, and I certainly have some hair color that I used to use on TV. So he's welcome to any of that stuff.
I'm sorry for entirely derailing.
No, it was wonderful because for a minute there I thought that Steve heard it and was purposely just being like silent. I'm not going to laugh. Yeah, I loved it.
No, no, I kind of blacked out there for a second. It happens every so often when you get to be this age.
He is the voice of the Seahawks. Steve Rabel joins us every single Thursday for the Huddle. Thanks so much, Rabes.
Hey guys, thank you. See you Sunday in San Fran.
That's right. All right, we are going to, before we bring on John Boyle, who's the Seahawks reporter, we're going to get the latest updates on the team and take a look ahead with some of our final thoughts. We're going to jump across enemy lines, head down to San Francisco for an opponent preview with ESPN's Nick Wagner. Don't go anywhere. This is The Huddle.
This is The Huddle.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
On Seattle Sports Station.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and Stacey Ross joining us now for an opponent preview. It is Nick Wagner of ESPN. Nick, the 49ers, a team where we weren't quite sure how to place in our own rankings. They could be really great, but they also have a lot of unknowns, especially at quarterback. What did we learn about Trey Lance in week one?
Yeah, unfortunately for the 49ers, Stacey, and for us, I don't think we learned a whole lot just because it was hard to gauge what exactly was happening, what was real and what wasn't because of the conditions that they were playing. And it was one of the rainiest games I've ever covered in 18 years of covering this league, in the fourth quarter in particular, after the 49ers fell behind 13-10 and had to start throwing the ball. It was really monsoon status. So we did learn a whole lot. I will say, you know, there were some good things from Trey Lance early on in that game before the weather got too bad. There were also some bad things before the weather got too bad as well. But I think that's going to be the Trey Lance experience this year. I think at least in the early part of the season, there's going to be those ups and downs. I think the 49ers have kind of planned for that and they're expecting that. But in terms of like getting a gauge on where he is, I think it'll be easier to do that once he plays in more normal setting, which as of the right now, the forecast for this weekend, at least for Sunday, may not give him that opportunity. So it's kind of a funny situation here.
Yeah, tough situation for Trance. You watch that film, Nick, and you see the potential, right? You see the arm strength. He made a couple of throws early that had me kind of excited just to see how he grows. But with Jimmy Garoppolo lurking on that sideline, man, is that a real issue? Do you think fans will be calling for Jimmy if things don't go well here in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely from a fan perspective, that's going to happen. It probably is already happening, to be completely honest with you. And it's kind of a weird situation because, you know, people are so dug in on either side. And people want to have – they don't necessarily – even fans of the team, they care more about their opinion being right than the team doing well, which is odd to me. And so you get a lot of people who are dug in on both sides of this. And I think the big thing, though, is how does the locker room view it? Because – at the end of the day, nobody knows better than the players in that locker room if a guy's not doing his job up to the standard that is set. And this is a team that was in the NFC Championship last year, Super Bowl a few years ago. They believe they can be a contender for that this year. And so that's going to be the hard sell. And what Kyle Shanahan told his team before they made the move to keep Jimmy Garoppolo, he had a meeting with 15 team leaders, veterans who've been around from all position groups, sat them down and said, look, I need you guys to have Trey's back like you've always had Jimmy's back. And there were moments last year where people were calling for Trey Lance, if you remember. So the idea is that they're going to have to support Trey in that locker room when he struggles, which is going to happen and already has happened at some level. So that's going to be the kind of the key thing. I don't think this is a team that cares much about what the outside people say. Particularly Kyle Shanahan doesn't care about that. But what goes on in that locker room if and when Trey Lance struggles?
I remember watching this team last year, and in part for fantasy reasons, there was always a running back that was doing well. So I really enjoyed it, but it was also really fast. Shanahan just find ways to maximize this run game. In week one against the Bears, that was not the case. Now, the Bears weren't really great either, so this could have also been a product of the weather. But tell me a bit about the depth they have at running back and what you've seen so far.
Yeah, they're going to be tested right away because Elijah Mitchell, who was their clear-cut number one running back going into the season, suffered a knee sprain in that game, a right knee sprain against the Bears. He's going to miss about 2 months. And so 49ers are already testing their depth, which has been a common theme. In the 5 years that Kyle Shanahan has been here, they have had a different leading rusher in each of those five seasons. And a lot of that is because they've had injuries throughout that time. And so once again, this is actually the second year in a row they lost their starting running back in week one. And so now it's Jeff Wilson Jr., and it's a couple of untested rookies, guys who haven't played offensive snaps in the NFL at all in a regular season game, in Jordan Mason and Tyrion Davis Price. So Jeff Wilson is going to probably be the guy just because he's got the most experience. He's been around the longest. He actually was the team's leading rusher in 2020. But Deebo Samuel is the other X factor there, and now Trey Lance, too, if we're being honest about it. Lance and Samuel were the two leading rushers on the team on Sunday, and they had a lot of rushing yards as a team, but nobody had more than, I think, Lance had 54, which was the most on the team. So it's probably going to be a group effort, but you're going to see a lot of Deebo Samuel and some more trailer game than you might have when Elijah Mitchell was healthy.
Nick, week one stats are always hard, right? You're trying to find an edge. You're comparing both teams. And you look at the Niners' week one rankings and stats, and it looks like a 49er team, right? The number one total defense, only allowing 204 yards. Number one against the pass, 105. But then we realized that it was raining like heck over there, right? But I look at this defense, and you see the names Nick Bosa. You see Fred Warner. But there is a guy who popped out on the film to me. I don't want to mess up his name. Talanoa Hufanga. Man, this dude is flying around making plays. Tell me about this dude and what he means to this defense.
Yeah, he's one of the few new starters they have this year. They've only got three new starters on that defense. He was a fifth-round pick out of USC. And the reason he was – there's two reasons that he kind of fell to the fifth round, because he was a really productive college player. But number one, he had a lot of injury issues in college. Part of that is his playing style, as you mentioned, kind of flying around, you know, being a little bit reckless with his body. But that seems to work for him. But that contributed to injuries in college, which I think hurt him. And he just wasn't, you know, didn't time fast. He wasn't one of those guys who was going to light up the 40-yard dash at the combine or whatever. But the thing that they love about him and the thing that he does so well is he's very instinctive. He's one of those guys who sees things kind of happen before they do, or what's about to happen before they do, and he can get to the spot pretty quickly. And so last week, I think it was a perfect storm for him, pun intended, because he was in a situation where he was able to just kind of fire off the ball, He knew the Bears weren't going to be throwing a lot, particularly in that rain, and it helped him a lot. But he also made some mistakes. You know, the 51-yard touchdown pass that Justin Fields threw, you know, he escaped a sack, and Talanoa Hufanga didn't plaster downfield. He left Dante Pettis all alone. They get the completion. Pettis runs it in for a touchdown. So still some mistakes, and it'll be interesting to see how Hufanga does moving forward when teams are more likely to throw the ball, because from what we've seen, at least so far, and he's just better up in the box and playing the run than he is necessarily on the back end.
Hey, Nick, there were a lot of mistakes. Some good things, a lot of mistakes last week for this team. I mean, I'm here looking at 12 penalties, which would be fantastic if they could have 12 penalties this week. But kind of leads me to my next question here. What's something that feels very fixable between weeks one and two, and what's something that's probably going to take this team a little longer to figure out?
Yeah, the fixable thing is those penalties, but I also say that with the caveat that this was the third most penalized team in the league last year in terms of penalty yards. So it's easy to sit here and say, and I will say this, out of those 12 penalties last week, a lot of them were the types that are fixable. It's not, you know, a 50-50 call where it's, oh, the ref is calling a holding or the ref is calling a pass interference. It could have gone either way kind of thing. It's stuff like unnecessary roughness when the quarterback slides and you're hitting it. Like, those the thing, and it could be bang-bang, but some of those were pretty obvious. Like, there was a face mask on Dre Greenlaw that kept the drive alive for the first touchdown for the Bears, and it could have easily been avoided. So things like that that should be fixable, you would like to think, but again, I say that with the caveat of this has been a little bit of an issue for this team in recent years, so maybe it won't go away as easily. And then the thing that's going to take a little bit longer is, quite frankly, you know, their offensive line has three new starters. They have Mike McGlinchey, their right tackle, who's coming off of a serious quad injury. That's four question marks next to the best left tackle in football in Trent Williams. And that's a big thing. And you combine that with an inexperienced quarterback in Trey Lance. That's a tough thing to solve. And so I think this team in the beginning part of the season, their hope is that Trey Lance can just do enough, not make big mistakes, do enough to keep them in games, let the defense do its thing, and the running game will be there, and they'll be able to win games that way as Lance continues to get better. But how quickly that happens, especially with an offensive line full of question marks, is still really up in the air.
All right, the next time these two teams meet will be December 15th, and I am fascinated to see where both clubs are going to be by then. Lots of really, really fascinating questions and players here to watch. He is Nick Wagner of ESPN joining us for The Huddle. Nick, thank you so much for taking the time.
You got it. Take care.
You are listening to The Huddle. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
On Seattle Sports Station.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and Stacey Rost. It is a two-hour preview show for the Seahawks every single Thursday from noon to 2. And we are wrapping things up, just as we always do, with Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. Boyle, how's it going?
It's going great. How are y'all doing?
We're good. I mean, great news about Sean Alexander earlier.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Sad news about Jamal. We're going to get to both those things. I'm going to start with week two, though, with just a look ahead to what I think might be the Seahawks' biggest challenge in this one. Trey Lance, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the running game in general, yeah. He's a big factor in that. I guess other side of the ball, the pass rush always makes me nervous when you're playing the 49ers. But, yeah, I mean, Trey Lance, to me at least, he seems like kind of an unknown still. He just hadn't played a lot of football, but you do know that he can run the ball. We saw that last week, even in that terrible weather in Chicago. So, you know, Seahawks allowed 5.2 rushing yards per attempt against the Broncos. They got to clean that up a little bit.
So, with Geno, I don't know if Pete said anything to like this effect or how you feel about it, but that was like something that we haven't really seen from him. I don't want to say I was shocked, because then it makes it sound like, well, I didn't think he was a very good player. I thought he was a good player, but like, he looked like Justin Herbert or Patrick Mahomes or any of the, you know, and we always say, look, there's, you know, there's 32 quarterbacks, obviously, but there's like 12 of them that are really special. He looked like one of those.
He made some real special plays, especially that first half. Yeah, I mean, we're going to get a headline now that Dave Wyman says Geno Smith is better than Patrick Mahomes. But
I love it.
let's start the hype train.
Geno Herbert.
I mean, look, I've been, you know, there's a few of the guys on the beat that we watch practice, and we've been talking for a while. Like, Geno Smith is better than people think he is. He just kind of gets this rap that, you know, he's been backup forever and he's no good. And yeah, he struggled a little bit with the Jets when he was young and on a bad team. But you watch him throw the ball in practice every day. He's got a good arm and he's accurate, and that showed up. Now, look, some of those plays were pretty special things. You just don't necessarily expect out of a guy. The touchdown to Will Disley where he's got a blitzer coming right at him. That one where he's broke free on third down and hit Marquise Goodwin on the sideline. I mean, those were, like you said, there's some special plays. But just overall that he was accurate and efficient and ran the offense well, that part didn't surprise me. But, you know, was I thinking 17 for 18 in the first half? Of course not. Yeah.
So Jamal's out. Sounds like Josh Jones is going to be the guy to step up. They must think highly of him. I think they set him the third preseason game, or at least I didn't see him out there. How is this defense? How do you think this defense is going to change not having Jamal in there?
Yeah, I mean, look, they really like Josh Jones. He was awesome in training camp in the preseason, and they have confidence that he can be out there and be a really good player, kind of just like Ryan Neal did when he filled in. But Jamal is such a unique player. There's nobody who's going to replace exactly what he was doing in that defense in terms of the blitzing, just all the different ways they move him around. We saw a lot where, you know, they'd bring Jones on as a third safety and put Adams down in the box more like a linebacker. Can they still do that with Jones or with Ryan Neal, bringing Neal as the third guy? Sure, but will they do as much? I don't know.
Right.
That's going to kind of be something we'll have to see unfold here over the next few weeks, is if they get away from that three safety look more or not. But yeah, I mean, it's just more than anything, you just feel bad for Jamal. I mean, this guy, he wasn't hardly ever hurt in New York. I think he missed 2 games in 3 years. Yeah. You know, that wasn't like a seen as a risk as part of that trade, as you're getting a guy with an injury history, and yet he's had the shoulders, the finger stuff, and now this. You just feel bad for a guy who clearly has a huge passion for football and is now going to have to miss another big chunk of time.
Someone who could be coming back, Ken Walker. It sounds like Pete Carroll expects him to be out. How much would you think we could see him? Is he like full go? Is he still getting back?
I mean, we'll see. We got, you know, like Pete Carroll always says, we got to see how he gets through the week. But I think that, you know, he's not a guy you're going to ask to come carry the ball 20 times, even if he is a full go, because you've got Penny out there kind of carrying the load. So to me, what, you know, people were going to ask, well, what's his role going to be? A lot of that to me depends on how the offense is doing and just how many plays they get. If it's like last week where they have a quiet second half and they only get, I think, that 49 offensive plays or something like that, there's not going to be a lot of carries for anybody but Rashad Penny. Now, if they can sustain a bunch of long drives and get their rushing game going, then it'd be fun to see what Walker has, because, boy, he sure looked really explosive before he got sidelined there.
One thing I didn't anticipate was the reaction from Shelby Harris at the end of the game.
Yeah, he was fired
up.
It was
awesome. You know, it's funny because you think about, okay, Drew Locke and him and Noah Fant were part of the trade, but I guess I didn't really consider, just because Russell Wilson going there, we didn't think about the other guys, right?
Like, yeah.
How that feels to them.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so for Shelby Harris, and it showed during the game, like he really, you know, maybe this guy's a much better player than we've given him credit for, because a couple of times he got penetration. He was like 3 yards deep in the backfield. I mean, he had a little bit of an edge, and I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, no, he was fired up, and he is a good player. He was a guy that, you know, he wasn't like a throw-in piece of this trade. I mean, the guys they brought over in this trade were guys they really wanted and thought could help the team. And you know, it's funny, he talked before the game about, I think it was a couple days before, about, you know, he learned when he played his former team with the Broncos and played the Raiders about making too much of it and too much emotion, so he had to avoid that pitfall. But clearly there's still some emotion there, but he sure handled it well because he played really well.
Mike Jackson was a guy I was happy to see make the team. Honestly, I didn't think he was going to start on Monday, but he did, and he made some plays. Only time I really saw Sidney Jones in, I think, was when Tariq Woolen went out with that stinger in his shoulder. You think Mike did enough to remain the starter?
I mean, I would think so. Sidney's a really good player, so it kind of feels like eventually he would push his way back into the lineup, but they've loved what they've gotten out of Mike Jackson. He made a bunch of plays. I mean, the two fumble recoveries, he had a pass breakup in the end zone down there, so it's going to be, I would think, kind of an ongoing competition, and see how they do in practice and all that. And I mean, the good news is either way, you feel like you've kind of got an extra starter should you need it. But I mean, to me, Mike Jackson was one of the really cool stories of camp, of a guy that, you know, if you'd asked me on July 20, whatever, when they came to camp, if he was going to be on the 53-man roster, I would have, you know, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe he's a practice squad guy, and all of a sudden he's starting week one, and not by, you know, a bunch of injuries caused it. He earned it, and he played well.
Last question before we get to some final thoughts from all three of you guys. Obviously, Pete Carroll mentioned, it's week one. There are things that we love, things we want to do better. Mm-hmm. What's something that you personally thought this was really encouraging to see week one, and what's something that you still have as a question?
I mean, the obvious one that's really encouraging was Geno. I mean, just seeing him control the offense, take care of the football. I mean, those are things we wanted. And he doesn't need to complete, you know, whatever percentage he did every week. If he can, great. But just even if you just get some of the playmaking and the taking care of the ball, that's going to help you win a lot of games. We referenced it earlier, but thing kind of question mark it, to me, you got to clean that run defense up. You cannot play the 49ers allowing teams to rush like that because they'll be more committed to it. I mean, that's the thing that you can give up 5.2 a carry against Denver if they're not running a ton and they were behind in the second half, so they're throwing more. But if you give up that kind of yards to San Francisco, they're going to get you.
I was surprised they weren't running more early often, or maybe I shouldn't have been. But let's, speaking of, do our keys to the game here. That could easily be one. I'll go John Wyman, wrap up with Bump. So our keys to a Seahawks win in week two, what's got to happen?
I mean, we just talked about a couple of them, but I'll, to give a different one, I'm just going to say, you know, with, especially with those rookie tackles and that pass rush, keep Geno Smith fairly clean. It's, you can't ask for, you know, no sacks, no quarterback hits. That's probably not realistic, but, you know, maybe keep him to one or two sacks and limit the damage there because that's a great front.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah, my biggest worry is the, and I'll just specifically say linebacker play as far as the run game goes because, you know, Uchenna, don't worry about at all. Daryl Taylor had some, you know, young guy mistakes. And, you know, that's the thing when you're young and you can run, you know, you flow fast, that they'll kill that. They'll pick up on it, San Francisco. And if you don't stay home and everybody do their job, that run game by the 49ers will kill you. So I'll put it specifically on the linebackers.
Yeah, mine kind of goes off of Dave. It's just be assignment friendly. Line up where you're supposed to line up and do what you're supposed to do because – you are going to see a lot of pulling, a lot of play fakes, some read options. They are going to throw it at you, especially with an athletic quarterback who they're not sure about throwing the rock yet with Trey Lance. Yeah. Shanahan's going to have things doing. You guys can't see me. I'm crossing my arms right now. Things doing
for radio, got to describe. All right. That was The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and Stacey Ross. John Boyle joining us for our final segment along with our final thoughts while we wrap up here. Final seconds, by the way. Any big injuries we need to know about for this one?
You know, they came out of it. Jamal was the obvious one, of course. Otherwise, it sounds like they're pretty clean, and the big hope is getting some guys back, maybe Damian Lewis, too, and you mentioned Walker earlier.
All right. Well, let's hope to get not only a few of these guys back, but get that win in week two against San Francisco. This has been The Huddle. Don't go anywhere.